This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. As we still deal with the coronavirus pandemic, we see more and more small businesses in Indiana starting to recover, but not enough of them are recovering. And to find out the latest, let's talk to Barbara Quant. She is the head of the Northwest Indiana Division of the National Federation of Independent Business. And Barbara, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Hello, Chris. It's so good to talk with you again.
Bring us up to date, if you will, on how Hoosier small businesses are doing as they're trying to dig out, almost literally, from the effects of the pandemic.
Well, as you know, our research foundation has been tracking the effect of coronavirus on the economy and the health of Hoosiers and people all across the United States. And what they found recently, you know how bad it was when I first started talking to you.
That's right.
Well, now we do have a little ray of sunshine here. 27% of the owners reported experiencing a significant or moderate increase in sales due to eased restrictions. And another 27% reported a slight increase. And 42% said sales levels did not change. So roughly over half said we're seeing some rays of light here. We're starting to have increased sales.
Are a lot of the businesses that have started to bounce back, so to speak, they've just been able to get the supplies they need, the PPEs, and make the other changes that they need to make to their facilities to be able to be ready to welcome people back in?
You know, I talk with small business owners every day, and I'm not hearing that they're having any difficulty getting the equipment and supplies that they need. I think Indiana has been particularly good about offering the availability of PPE for business owners all over the state. And so that's not something that they're at least having to face right now.
Are they dealing with the changes that they have to make physically, putting up the sneeze guards and separating and removing tables and chairs and all to be able to get the social distancing requirements met?
Yes, I think the shutdown affected them so deeply that they were basically willing to do anything they could to get things back on track.
I know that
anything they needed to do. So while they may not be happy about having to do it, they are glad to have the opportunity to be in business at all right now.
I know in our past conversations, we've been able to mention, among other people, one particular business owner here in Northwest Indiana that had been fighting his way through the whole process of getting the help that he needed to be able to get his business reopened. Bring us up to date on how Jason is doing. Remind us a little bit about his business and what he's had to do and what to basically go through here and how he's doing these days.
Well, Jason is a fantastic story. When I first began speaking with you, Jason owns and operates M&M Car Care Center in Merrillville, and then he's got a second location. And when I first started talking with him, he was just desperate. He needed help. There was nothing coming through for him. He hadn't received the PPP, and it was very dire for his situation. Well, I'm happy to say that I just spoke with him, and he says that his business right now is going extremely well.
That's good to hear.
He said he got the PPP, and that came through, and that was helpful, but it certainly he needed more. And then he applied for the EIDL, and that's the disaster loan that has interest and you pay it back over a period of time. That one came through. He is actually, he has hired three more people. So he has actually kept on the staff that he had, that he kept going all during this time when there was no business coming in. And then, and he also did something that he had a promotion that he did. He invested in offering a free oil change and lunch to the first responders.
Yeah.
And so he that all worked well. In other words, this is just a great, this is the best story that I have heard, and it's right there in your area.
That's great to hear. I know one of the major issues, besides dealing with getting the funding from the federal government through the CARES Act, that you mentioned that Jason's a good example of that had to gone through. I know that many small businesses are still dealing with the issues of unemployment insurance. What stories have you heard from Indiana about how the folks with the Indiana Department of Workforce Development are doing in helping small businesses cope with all of this?
Well, I think as far as the Department of Workforce Development and handling the unemployment, I think they've been doing yeoman's work to get this up and running, a whole new area with the $600 additional funding that was coming for per week benefit that was coming from the federal government. And so I think they've done a great job. The problem that we're having with our members are reporting to us is that people don't want to come back to work. Restaurant owners in particular have told me that they go to hire call people back, and they are either saying that they can't come back because they're making too much money on unemployment, or they just don't answer the call.
Yeah.
Or respond. So apparently the $600 additional benefit has actually worked in reverse for small businesses, and it while helpful, I'm sure, to the people that needed it, they don't want to come back.
Yeah. Now, Barbara, are you noting from the NFIB Indiana members that you've checked in with that on that respect that they're having to go out there and beat the bushes looking for new employees because the folks won't come back?
Yes. Exactly. If they're on unemployment, they're in no hurry to get back to work. At
yeah.
least that's the sense I'm getting from our members. And so, yes, the unemployment is a problem for Hoosier business owners.
Yeah.
So hopefully it won't be continued, because there's an effort to continue that until the end of the year. And if that's the case, some of these people who've suffered through, I mean, the business owners who've suffered through the shutdown and all of that, this was an unintended or unanticipated consequence of the work that was done to help families and small businesses.
Well, it looks like that the small business owners didn't anticipate having to go out there and have to put want ads in, so to speak, of the way that used to be done to look for those people to fill those positions. Yeah.
Yes, especially with so many out of work.
Yeah.
You think so? I'm sure there are people that are coming back, but they're having to retrain or train people for the job. So, my concern is, of course, that we haven't really begun to see the real fallout of this economic crisis, because there are so many different moving parts. I have I spoke with one of our members who's in the Indianapolis area who has a firm that works with conventions, and he has no business, zero. In fact, I think he said that there's one potential convention coming into Indianapolis, but he works all over the country.
Yeah.
And so his business is done, and he's just trying to stay alive until something opens up again.
Well, Barbara, thank you for spending time with us with the update. We really appreciate it, and hope to have you back again. And although we see the ray of hope from the small business sector in Indiana and here in Northwest Indiana, we hope that we'll have more light come in and more promising things to say in the future. Thanks for spending time with us today.
All right.
Barbara Quant is the state director of the National Federation of Independent Business here in Indiana. The Legacy Foundation, which is the Maryville-based nonprofit that serves Lake County, is adding on to its staff a former worker with the South Shore Arts Organization, but very knowledgeable in economic development and in particular with community development. Donna Catalano is with us to talk about her new job with the Legacy Foundation. And Donna, thank you for joining us on Regionally Speaking today.
Well, thank you for having me, Chris. I feel like we've been doing this for many years. It's just that we're just wearing different hats sometimes.
That's right. Well, as we mentioned, that you had worked for South Shore Arts as well as being a regional representative for the Indiana Arts Commission for Lake Porter and LaPorte counties. What do you see is your role now working with the Legacy Foundation, and how does it link up in many ways with the arts community?
Okay, I think what it did mostly for me is my position with the Arts Commission took me out into the communities to work with grantees, to find grantees, and to cultivate those. So I think that'll come real handy in what I'm going to be doing now for Legacy Foundation.
Mm-hmm. What is the organization that is known as the South Shore Neighborhood Development Corporation Initiative? What is that all about?
Well, what it is that... we found that residents and community-based organizations and small businesses, and especially in neighborhoods where development can be, you know, slow or harder to get going, the South Shore Neighborhood Development Corporation, we want to focus on rebuilding areas of Lake County to help increase economic opportunity and to afford residents a little bit more mobility and ways to get out there. So what we do is we try and do some programs that will help them grow where they're at.
What have you discovered over the years, not only with your role as working with South Shore Arts, but also just being a member and a resident in the Crown Point and other organizations? Do you feel that you've had a chance to see what is happening in the community and communities as well, all of those for that matter, here in Lake County, that you see needs to be done or that needs to be improved?
I think there's always room for improvement no matter where you are or what year it is, I think. I think what really helped me is a number of years ago, I took a course called, you know, Leadership Northwest Indiana, which is now South Shore Leadership, and it's under the auspices of Purdue University.
Mm-hmm.
But what it does is it lets you go around the community or the area and find out what valuable things we have and the diversity and where we can go with all this. And so you have to find the right people and do certain things. I think one of my programs that I'm going to do now is the Lake County Eats Local. And it's really a neat program. And it's funded by the U.S. Department of Agriculture's Farmer Market Promotional Program. And then what we do is we help land-based and on-the-go farmers markets. And let's try to get fresh fruit, food more into those areas that are considered food deserts. So we're working with the Purdue University Cooperative, the Northwest Indiana Food Council, the City of Gary's Department of Green Urbanism and Environmental Affairs, and the City of East Chicago's Department of Parks and Recreation. And so we have a van that we take to farmers markets, even though we don't organize all the farmers markets, but we can help any farmers market. So we can, if you have a farmers market and you need our truck, which has a refrigeration unit, we'll be happy to bring it out there so you can store things.
That's
or
great.
We have a EBT SNAP machine. So if you as a vendor can't accept SNAP, but you sell items that are covered under SNAP, we can take care of that and reimburse you for those.
What have you found, and this is even before taking the position with the Legacy Foundation, but you've no doubt noticed, what has the impact of the coronavirus pandemic had on Northwest Indiana, and in particular with organizations that need help and people that need help because of food insecurity?
Well, I think, with Legacy Foundation, they had their CARES grants and that they gave out. But my part of that, and I'm just a little bit different because I'm the Neighborhood Development Corporation, my section offered a grant, what was called a technical assistant grant, for someone who wanted to apply for the PPP loan. And a lot of these small organizations, they don't have the staff. Most of them are volunteer, or some of them have such a limited staff. But what we did was we gave a $500 grant to these small organizations that would let them hire a CPA to fill out their paperwork for their PPP loan. And we assisted six organizations in Lake County, and with those six organizations, they received over $2 million in PPP loans and saved over 300 jobs that were able to be sustained. So we consider that a success.
Do you think that this program in particular certainly has helped a lot of people get reestablished in their businesses or their organizations?
And
nonprofits in particular. Was this something that you noticed in particular that the arts community needed the most help on, as well as all of the nonprofits for that matter?
The organization, of the six organizations, there are a couple arts organizations, but there was also a couple organizations that were child care facilities, because you forget that all the people that are still working don't have access to that anymore. So you have to make those available to people so they can get to work, so that they can sustain keeping their family together and being able to go do the things that they need to do. So, and I believe Tradewinds was one of our PPP grants, so it worked out quite well.
Oh, good. Now, even though you have your hands full working within the South Shore Neighborhood Development Corporation, and within particular, you mentioned the Lake County Eats Local initiative that you're working on, are there any others that you and your colleagues at the Legacy Foundation have talked about that you'd like to take on once you get things established?
Well, one of the ones that we're just getting going on is a housing project. And right now we're rehabbing a home in the Aetna neighborhood in Gary.
Mm-hmm.
And we've contracted Roger Hayward, who runs a program called It's Gary's Time. So he is rehabbing this home. And what's nice about that is that he provides job training and reentry programs for ex-offenders. So he teaches them skills, not only job skills, but life skills, so that they can get to the point where they have a stable job, they can have a home of their own, they can get going in life again. And you want to avoid recidivism.
Yeah.
And and it's a great thing, because we don't realize that low-income housing is at a crisis level. I think in the state of Indiana, according to the National Low Income Housing Coalition, in the state of Indiana, for every 100 low-income families that are looking for rental housing, there are only 28 units available.
Wow.
I know. And that's a big housing crisis. So that is our next big thing that we want to tackle.
Well, it sounds like you've got quite a bit to get started here as you get the new position underway for yourself. And
sure.
And Donna, thank you for spending time going over it, and the best of luck to you and all your colleagues at the Legacy Foundation, in particular as you get the initiatives within the South Shore Neighborhood Development Corporation going. And we hope to have you back on to talk again soon.
Oh, thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me again.
Donna Catalano is the new Community Development Director with the Legacy Foundation, which is Lake County's foundation, and she's focusing in on the South Shore Neighborhood Development Corporation initiative. This is Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. Dr. Chandana Vivilala is the Lake County Health Officer, and she is the person who's been keeping a closest eye, probably more than anybody else, on how the coronavirus pandemic has been working its way through Lake County, and she's with us for an update. Thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you for having me, Chris.
Well, first, bring us an update, if you will, on the number of cases here that have been reported here in Lake County.
The number of tests that we have done until now, which is the second number of the highest tests that have been done in the state of Indiana, is 35,986, with positive cases being 4,596. And the deaths being 238. And we have, over the past few days, when we are looking at the trends in Lake County,
mm-hmm.
the good news is that we have had a little bit of a gradual drop in the ICU admissions, that is the intensive care units. We have had a little bit of a decrease in the deaths. We did have a little bit of a bump up in the hospitalizations, but patients have not been needing to be admitted to the intensive care units or needing to be on the ventilators. So these are all, the trends are very encouraging.
When you talk about the cases that have ended up in hospital, are these mostly, as you say, mostly cases, people coming in maybe to the emergency departments and yes, being checked out? And they may have had to stay, but as you say, they haven't ended up in the ICU, I guess.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are people who are visiting hospital because of the concern of the COVID-19, either exposure or symptoms. And some of them, as you say, are needing to be admitted to the hospital, but we are seeing fewer patients needing intensive care unit admissions as well as fewer deaths. So all the effort which we have been putting, and mostly the community has been putting, in taking the precautions as far as trying to isolate themselves and staying home when they are sick, as well as trying to maintain safe distancing and trying to wear cloth masks, which is extremely highly recommended.
Yeah.
Because we need to continue to take all the precautions that we have been doing so far, hence the reason why we are seeing the trends which are improving. On the other hand, if we are going to be lax about taking the precautions, then unfortunately we will see higher numbers of all the things which we talked about so far. So it's extremely important that we kind of continue to take all the precautions, because keep in mind, any kind of a timeline is man-made. It is not virus-made. The virus has no concept of any timeline. So all the people who are going to be at high risk, which pretty much anyone with any kind of a chronic medical condition, as congestive heart failure, history of heart attack, or especially chronic renal failure, high blood pressure, diabetes, pregnant women, people who have had stroke, cancer, anyone with a body mass index of more than 30, which includes a number of people. So who are going to be at a higher risk of contracting COVID and can becoming seriously ill. So we should continue to take all the precautions that we have been taking so that our trends continue to go down.
I've seen articles lately, I'm sure you have too, from a lot of health experts who talk about what is referred to as the bubble, and how if you keep your bubble centered basically to just members of your family, people that you are with all the time, and take precautions with other people that you are not inside your bubble, that seems to help at least keep down the possibility that you're liable to contract it.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you, Chris, in the sense the bubble is going to help us stay safer in terms of trying to reduce our exposure to a larger group of people, which is very helpful. As well as if someone becomes sick in the group, it also is going to be very beneficial if we have smaller groups of exposure for us to do contact tracing, as well as that way we can reach out to the people who they have been exposed to in the bubble and recommending that they stay home and take all the proper precautions. So, mm-hmm. Yes, I completely agree with the fact that as we are protecting ourselves and as we stay in the bubble of being in smaller groups and continuing to take the precautions, then it would be very, very beneficial, both in terms of decreasing the risk of spread and also the number of people who would become hospitalized.
Now, as we get into close to the 4th of July holiday, what kind of responses that you all have noticed has been to contact tracing here in Lake County?
Well, we have been doing a lot of contact tracing. We have done pretty much all the contact tracing in the Lake County until May 11th or so. Mm-hmm. Since then, we have been partnering with the state, Indiana State Department of Health, which has been very helpful in terms of providing us more number of staff from the Department of Health in the state. So they are doing the major chunk of the contact tracing now, and the Lake County Health Department is more focused on any positive cases in the long-term care facilities or any kind of a congregate living. And going forward, once the schools open, Lake County Health Department would be in charge of taking an active role in doing all the contact tracing for any children or staff members who will be positive in the schools. Mm-hmm. And again, even for the children and the families, the bubble is very important, because we want to make sure, especially our interest at the health department in the Lake County, and I'm sure everywhere, we want to keep the education uninterrupted. We want to try to make sure that we kind of have the least amount of interruptions possible. So the more precautions that we can take within the schools as well as the outside of the schools, which is all of our responsibility. It is going to help us make sure that our children's education is continuing uninterrupted.
Have you had a chance to talk with the superintendents and the school districts in Lake County? Once they've got now that their information from the Department of Education, the guidelines they have to work with, to help them fine-tune them so they will be ready to be able to deal with things?
Yes. We have been working very closely with the superintendents of the schools of the Lake County, and we will continue to meet them as often as needed going forward in the next several weeks, and we will continue to do so even after the schools open up.
One of the other questions I wanted to ask Dr. Vavilala is about the health department, the Children's Immunization Clinic. Is it still open? Can youngsters still get immunizations? Did you mention that they may need for classes when they do go back to school?
Absolutely. The children, we are open to immunization. Only thing is we are doing the immunizations by appointment only, but we have plenty of appointments available. So please call in ahead, make your appointment. Please bring your children and get them immunized. We don't want them to be exposed to or be concerned about any other preventable childhood illnesses. So we highly, highly recommend, I personally highly recommend, to bring your children, and the immunization department is open.
Thanks very much for the information, and the best of luck to everybody at the health department in keeping up with the latest data on the COVID-19 pandemic, and we hope to have you back again soon.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Chris.
Dr. Chandana Vavilala is Lake County's health officer. Here on Ridgely Speaking, we talked from time to time to State Senator Eddie Melton, who's from Gary, about the issues that are here in Northwest Indiana and around the state of Indiana. But we have issues that go beyond that as well, too, that he and members of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus are very concerned about. And Senator Melton, thank you for joining us on the program today, first off.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I know that you and your fellow members of the caucus are very concerned, of course, with all the protests that have come about, concerning about policing procedures in not only the Northwest Indiana, the rest of the state, but the country as well, too. And I know that you and your colleagues have proposed a two-phase plan to try to deal with police reform. First, tell us a little bit about that.
We've initially launched an agenda where we are in the first phase currently right now. And we have demanded that the governor address these issues from an executive level, hoping that he would issue an executive order to outlaw the ban of the use of a chokehold by law enforcement. This is just one of many action steps that should be taken. I firmly believe that once we get into 2021 legislative session, we can address this and codify that executive order and make law. But we can't wait until January to make these steps happen.
Mm-hmm.
We also are demanding that there is a commission to evaluate and study the laws and policies and law enforcement that have historically had implicit or explicit bias to black and brown and all peoples of in the communities that have historically grappled or dealt with these issues. So there are several other items. The phase one, it is more of an executive step, also urging mayors and chiefs of police to look at following the same act if the governor move forward. The second phase is more of legislative action items we are proposing to address the policing issues, police community relations aspect, various bills that we have filed for a number of years, and also looking at certain issues like banning the no-knock warrants that we've seen situations occur where he was killed in Louisville, Kentucky, in her own home. So there's so much reform and issues that we have to address, ensuring that we provide officers the support when it comes down to mental health, and de-escalation training and techniques that would help save lives, and also reevaluating when should an officer be called to the scene of an issue, and should mental health professionals and other subject matter experts be called before law enforcement is called to non-emergency situations. So I think we have a lot of issues to review and evaluate to figure out what's the best policies to ensure that public safety is important for everyone.
I know that the question comes up, and you've just mentioned about the fact that, maybe mental health professionals ought to be called in first when they get a call in, if it's something that they can handle. We know that a few police departments, in particular, we know that the Griffith Police Department has a social worker on the department staff. Do you think that maybe this would have to come out in legislation sometime or another, that maybe they would have to require that all police departments in a community over a certain size, if need be, have a social worker on staff to be able to help deal with these issues so that the officers don't have to go out there and face these?
Well, I think it's definitely something we have to look at.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of the day, is always going to boil down to resources and ensuring that these departments and organizations have the resources to do and provide the support that they need for the community. So, but again, that's why we have, 6 months before even step foot in the State House for session. And it's important that work begins now.
Mm-hmm.
And on top of the nation and the country on this state grappling with COVID-19. So there's a variety of issues that are pressing and urgent that's life or death for so many.
And do you think that maybe this is an issue, especially when you talk about the creation of the commission that Governor Holcomb ought to be working on first, doing something about? As you say, you have this opportunity in the months ahead of the General Assembly session in January.
Well, we have a meeting with Governor Holcomb, and a Black Legislative Caucus will again go over our requests when it comes down to COVID-19 impact it has on communities that we represent, but also the policing situation that we're in now that we've always been dealing with. There's one best practice that I believe that even law enforcement that I've talked with across the entire state support, and that's looking at President Obama's 21st Century Policing Task Force report.
Mm-hmm.
And that report, and I was blessed to have the opportunity to attend the White House as they rolled that document out in 2015. And it was a document comprised of recommendations, not only from law enforcement, but grassroots community organizers that came up with recommendations on addressing accountability in policing, community engagement, training, technology, dashboards, cameras, and body cameras. So I will also urge the Trump administration to allow the Department of Justice to implement these practices on a federal level. I encourage legislatures and governors to look at this document to figure out how do we integrate these into our existing policies.
Well, Senator Milton, thank you for sharing the thoughts with us, and we hope that your meeting with the governor, when it comes up, is productive, especially if you have a chance to bring these issues up that you've mentioned here today, and we'll have you back on and give us, if you will, a status report. We appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate it, and look forward to sharing and updating the public when we get a chance.
Senator Eddie Belton is from Gary, and he's one of our representatives of the Northwest Indiana Legislative Coalition, and he's also a member as well of the Indiana Black Legislative Caucus. You're listening to Regionally Speaking on Lakeshore Public Radio. I'm Chris Nolte. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back with you tomorrow.